We're going to talk to Rock's first female roadie, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox, Chaz and AJ in the morning. Do you want to start with the end, the beginning, the middle?
Let's go with the middle.
Start with the middle?
Yeah.
Because the end would be this morning. She was woken up by an earthquake.
They go with that one.
So that's the most recent headline in her life.
Go with the end.
The beginning is we'll figure out how she got into the business.
All right.
But I want to just mention some names so you know she didn't travel with a couple of B or C bands, and then now she wrote a book. Elton John, Yoko and Sean Lennon, Ozzy Osbourne, Lollapalooza, Pearl Jam, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Ice Cube, Jane's Addiction.
Damn.
The list goes on. Santana, Susie Quattro, Neil Diamond, Dave Essex, Sayer, Status Quo.
Oh, my God, David Essex.
Who? We could just keep going. So now you know, right? This is the real deal.
Yes.
So not only first female, but one of the top roadies in the world, because you don't work with all these acts if you're a slouch.
No.
Good morning. Is it Tanya? Tanya? Tana?
It's actually Tana. Hi, good morning.
Tana.
How are you?
Tana.
I believe you're the first Tana I've ever spoken to. Tana Douglas.
Not unusual.
And she's got a book out called Loud. A Life in Rock and Roll by the World's First Female Roadie. How do you become a female roadie? You just hanging out and start carrying stuff?
It was all a little bit of an accident, really. I mean, I did a small production with a person called Philippe Petit, the guy who walked between the Twin Towers.
Oh, wow.
The tightrope walker.
Yeah.
In Australia. He'd been brought out to Australia as a cultural exchange thing for a festival out there. And he ended up doing, like, what he does, his commando things. And that took me down to Sydney in Australia. And, I was just turned, 15 years old. And I got to work on that production. So that was my first taste of production. And then when I finally ventured across to the other side of Sydney Harbour Bridge, I found myself interested in, the music industry and what goes on behind the scenes more than what actually went on the stage.
Well, I'm now more fascinated with the Twin Tower thing than I am with any of these bands. The Twin Tower, all right, so he made it, right?
Yeah, that was amazing.
He made it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
did he go with a parachute?
No. He's got, there was a movie made about it as well. I know.
Recently, right? It came out recently.
No,
yeah.
Pictures of one.
You don't get a movie if you don't make it.
Right.
Although,
right.
Titanic got a movie.
It's
they
true.
Didn't make it.
Oh, yeah.
But what's the distance between the two buildings? And then what's the distance down? And what was the wind that day? And then I'll get to the bands. Like, I'm sorry. I didn't even know this was on your resume. This is nuts.
We didn't measure it all, but in the book there's actually a photo that gives you an idea of the perspective, because it's taken from the bridge looking up into the towers. What it is Sydney Harbour Bridge has these two huge pylons, white pylons at each end of the bridge, and what we did is we strung the steel cable between the two and walked sideways. You can't walk the distance of the bridge. It's way too far to rig anything. You can't do that. So he went sideways across it, which is probably about, 12, equivalent of about 12 lanes of traffic, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a long way down.
Yeah, and the height, I don't even know what the height is. It was so long ago. But it's he looks like this little ant on it, and you can't even see the cable. So it looks like he's just suspended between these huge, giant mammoth pylons. So and don't know the weather forecast for the day. Sorry.
I'd be stressed out and would need 2 or 3 days off just watching that.
It was amazing. It was amazing. He lay down too. He stopped halfway.
Oh my God.
Actually lay down on the wire. Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, that's what got me. It was just like, oh my God, what's he doing?
He's so comfortable.
How's he gonna get, how's he gonna get back up again?
And being
off
cocky.
He went, you know.
What if you're halfway through and a bird lands on you?
Or even poops on you.
Then you adjust.
You're out of balance.
Then you adjust.
Yeah. Oh. Like, was there a sniper there? Like, if a pigeon got close?
Yeah, but if he misses, it hits him instead.
No, none of that. It was a commando type setup, so no one knew we were doing it. So we'd have to sneak up at nighttime and rig everything and under the cover of
darkness. Oh, you didn't have permission.
That happened also with the Twin Towers, wasn't it? He didn't have permission either.
Yeah, he never had permission. That was part of his shtick. He'd do all these things. Yeah.
Well, that makes it a lot harder.
Yep. Because now you got to get done really quick.
Wow. Well, I'm looking up this guy.
Yeah.
So I'm buying your book, by the way, and I'm looking up this guy.
Brilliant.
Tana Douglas is on the show. Rock's first female roadie. And coming up, she's going to tell us a story about doing shots with Bon Scott.
Nice.
It doesn't get better than that.
Nope.
I would think. I'm going to throw out some artist names, and then you tell me the first story that comes to mind. And by the way, you can get Tana's book, which is linked up on the radio station website. Lots of pictures, great stories. All of your favorite artists. Ozzy Osbourne.
Well, Ozzy, I had the dubious honor of doing Ozzy's first solo tour, which was the Blizzard of Oz tour. And it was a little chaotic, to say the least. You know, he and Sharon have just hooked up, so they were just becoming a unit, and she was just becoming their manager. There was a lot of internal problems between her and her dad, and the tour was hectic, to say the least.
Was her dad?
They didn't give us.
Was her dad part of the entourage?
No, Don Arden was. He'd actually managed Sabbath before, so he sort of still had Ozzy in tow, even though Ozzy had been sacked from the band. So Sharon found him in the office one day and decided that that's who she thought she'd managed, you know. So off she went. And however she did it, you know, her own technique, so to speak, you know. But, she got him a long and healthy career out of it because he was a driveling wreck at the time. So, I mean, she did something right, definitely. But she's a bit hard. She's a hard woman, you know, business-wise.
Well, tough, yeah. Anyone we've spoken with who's done business with her has said that. And, you know, I think you got to be tough. Sometimes you got to be tougher than a guy when you're a woman.
Right,
so people don't walk all over you. But I didn't realize her dad managed Sabbath.
Her dad managed a bunch of different people. He was quite a heavy hitter in the English music scene and had a reputation as being a bit of a gangster as well.
Wow. I was going to say, yeah.
And so you're with Ozzy. This album comes out. It's on fire, really, literally. Randy Rhoads, did you have interactions with him? What was he like?
Absolutely. He was a darling. I mean, he was the calm in the middle of the storm, actually. You know, little vegetarian dude with his girlfriend who was really quiet and shy as well. And, you know, you get him off stage and he was just the sweetest, nicest person, you know, and you get him on stage and he just lit up, you know. So he was like the calming element in the whole thing, you know, because Ozzy respected him a lot. So, you know, he could calm things down.
Well, what a guitar player, really.
Oh, what brilliant. Yeah, player. Brilliant. Tragic loss.
Were you there on that tour when the plane crashed?
You know, I was on a different tour because I'd moved to the States by that time, and I was actually doing an Air Supply tour.
Oh, wow.
And I'd come back. My future husband was on the Aussie tour. And so what happened was Air Supply went into Canada, and I went to spend 2 days on the Aussie tour with my future husband. And it was just a couple of days after I'd left to go back to my tour, the Air Supply tour, that the plane crash happened.
So sorry for your loss, because these are people that were near and dear to you. But the story is that the plane was buzzing the tour bus. That's true?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was told, absolutely. And, you know, it had the foot pedal controls, you know, and I was told that the nanny who was in the plane as well, she was a rather big lady, and, you know, they believe that she might have had a heart attack and locked onto the pedals, not meaning to, but, you know, that sort of thing. So they're not sure if it was definitely operator error or if it was just a culmination of bad events that happened.
Oh, wow.
But all had the same tragic result.
Well, we're talking to someone who's had shots with Bon Scott. 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox, Chaz and AJ in the morning. Tana Douglas, rock and roll's first female roadie, has a book out called Loud A Life in Rock and Roll by the World's First Female Roadie. So the book is out, and you can get it, and we're linked up. But she's looking for an American publisher. So anyone listening?
Hello?
Like a... publish a really cool book that's probably going to become a movie. I'm just saying.
Hello.
Get on this, quick.
Hello.
Phil?
Our buddy Ray on Twitter tweeted at us that he read it this past weekend and says it is spectacular.
You know, what I like about the thought of this book, and, you know, I'm going to go out and buy it and read it, is that everybody wants to be backstage. This book brings you backstage. This is not the story of Freddie Mercury or Elton John
right.
and their drug troubles or Motley Crue. And this is your backstage with the crew.
Taking it right there.
Yeah. You'll know about things the band had no idea of what's going on.
None.
You know?
That's how good they were.
So let's start with Bon Scott and AC/DC.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was with them. They were like the first, well, they were the second band I ever worked for. So, you know, I was there right in the very beginning when the band was forming. We all lived in a house together in Lansdowne Road in Melbourne, Australia. And so I was with them for the first, you know, just over a year. So I joined them in 74 and left at the end of 75 to go and learn some more about my trade once I decided that this is really what I wanted to keep doing. So, you know, we became really good buddies, you know, living together, working together 24/7. So, and plus we were all so young at the time. So, you know, when I'd left and continued on to work with other bands and I'd moved to England and AC/DC came over to England, then I was working for the band called The Who, and we were doing this huge stadium show, you know, 80,000 people, which was huge at the time. I mean, it was unheard of at the time. And AC/DC was one of the bands on the bill supporting. So, you know, I got a bit of a chance to catch up backstage with Bon and, you know, shoot the breeze over what we've been up to in the 3 years since we'd all worked together and lived together. So he heard that I was working for The Who, so he grabbed a bottle of Jack Daniels, which was my poison at the time. Mm-hmm. I found him wandering around backstage. He'd just been looking, watching The Who's set. And we just pulled up a couple of flight cases and sat down and had shots, you know, and caught up with what was going on in each other's life.
Oh, this is great, because he was already done with the set, so he could sit down and drink with you.
Yeah, you're still working, though.
Absolutely. No, I just finished. I'd been up for days. You know, what happens with these huge one-off shows is you spend days and days, preparing everything for it. And there's always a couple of last-minute things. And, you know, we'd done the rehearsal, you know, a couple of days beforehand. And there were a couple of lighting things we needed to change. So we'd been up all night reprogramming and doing that sort of stuff. So, you know, when the show finished, instead of having to do the loadout, which we normally have to do, we got cut. Because we'd been going for like 3 days without sleep. So they said, well, you don't have to do the loadout, which was a huge relief to you know.
I drink.
And so wandering backstage, just heading out, and there he was.
You were a top person then, if you're not running around like adjusting, you know, cables or whatever.
Exactly. All those things
you're a top person.
Yeah.
There.
Oh, I was doing all that as well. Trust me. I mean, you know, in those days, everyone did everything. You know, there was very little white gloves going on, you know.
So what if you're drinking a bottle of Jack with Bon Scott and Peter Townsend's guitar goes out? And they're like, where the hell is Tana?
Well, that was already... No, the show was finished. The show was finished.
Oh, it was over.
Oh, it's done. Okay.
Where's Tana? She's having a ton of shots backstage.
Right. They weren't playing at the moment, yes.
Okay, now I get... Because when you said you weren't busy, I'm like, oh, you're not busy when the band is on? All right, I get it now.
No, well, normally as soon as the band comes off stage, we start, you know, start doing the real heavy lifting work. You know, we've done the creative stuff during the set. Now we've got to do the heavy lifting stuff. But myself and the lighting designer and a couple of others actually got told we didn't have to do the loadout because we'd been up for 3 days. They figured that was enough of the sacrifice.
And
plus, they didn't know if we'd make it through the loadout.
That's how many shots of that from that bottle of Jack did you do at Bon Scott?
You know, we were just passing it backwards and forwards, taking a swig. I mean, we were actually swigging out of the bottle. You know, there was no decorum there whatsoever. We'd moved from one flight case to another as they needed the cases to put the equipment into. So, you know, we hung out for probably about 20 minutes or so, you know, before I just had to go. You know, I couldn't go to the party or anything. I was knackered. You know, I'd literally been up for 3 days. So, you know, I hung out with him, did, you know, half a dozen quick shots and pulled myself into a car and went home, you know.
What was that?
I wasn't driving.
Did you think, you're so close to him. Did you kind of see what happened to him coming, or did people not know it was coming? Or
well, you know, we touched on it that day, funnily enough, that he felt that, you know, I mean, he always had this little insecurity about his age, being older than the rest of the band and that sort of stuff, you know. And you know, it's sad, but I always felt he never really, really 100% knew his true worth in the band, you know, which is a shame, really. It really is. It's a shame.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, he says, you know, I don't know, am I getting too old for this shit, you know? And it's, you know, I mean, it's tough, you know, a lot of personalities.
Tana, we're kind of losing you. Can you adjust that mouthpiece just a little bit, please?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm being a roadie to the roadie.
There you are.
Yeah, my back? There you go.
You're 100% back.
You're a sound technician.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these huge personalities have these insecurities. You know, it's not an easy job standing up every night and looking at, you know, anything between, you know, 1,000 to 100,000 people who all want something from you. You know, it's a huge pressure, really, that a lot of people don't really even consider.
When you were living with AC/DC, was there a sense that these guys were definitely going to make it, or it's a crapshoot? You never know.
No, no. You know what? From day one, I mean, when I got taken to the house, I was working for another band, a little Australian band. And, you know, they said, come to the house, doing it, you know, meet the boys, see what you think, see if you think you want to do the job, you know. So I got driven to the house. And, you know, the minute I walked into that room, it was just, there was something going on in that room. And it was just what the energy was just off the charts, you know. And there was Malcolm, Angus, Bon. And then there was George Young and Harry Vander, the two producers who produced all their original stuff. And then George came back later in later years to redo it. But, you know, there was just the chatter between them, the excitement between them. And it was just this, it was a knowledge that something huge was, I was looking at something huge. I didn't know what it was because yeah. It wasn't even a full band. You
but
know,
you, could, felt, you could feel the electricity.
Oh,
and this
yeah.
is before
yeah.
Angus is wearing the schoolboy uniform.
You know, Angus, you know, they started, there was a different version of AC/DC before that with a different lead singer than Bon. And, you know, that had fallen apart, you know, and they decided it wasn't working. And, you know, Angus had sort of jumped on different stuff, you know, put on a Zorro outfit at some point, a Superman outfit at another point, and, you know. But the schoolboy one stuck, you know, just because
great.
He, I mean, he looked so young and he was so little, you know, so. And that was a great one for publicity, you know what I mean? It's like the schoolboy, whereas I was the youngest one out of all of them. So it was quite funny, really.
Trademark, really.
Wow, we didn't even get to a fraction of these bands. First female roadie in rock, Tana Douglas. The book's linked up on the radio station website. We're looking for an American publisher, too. I'd love to be able to say she came on this show and found an American publisher.
Look what happened over here.
Ew.
Yeah, we got to let her go.
Absolutely.
She's going to do a, she has another radio show to do, but wow. We'd love you to be a regular. I'm wondering if you could give us a 60-second story on Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam, yeah. I was with Pearl Jam during the Lollapalooza days. So by that time, I was doing logistics, which is where you're taking care of doing all the customs for all the equipment that's used. So whether it's stage, set, back line, lighting, sound. And we just finished Lollapalooza tour and they had to leave immediately to go to Hawaii. And we're actually going to do all of the islands, which is kind of unusual. Not many bands play all of the islands, no larger bands. And, you know, so that was a bit of a challenge in itself, you know, finding the right aircrafts and things like that that we could get from A to B, you know, but it turned out to be quite a fun jaunt, you know, surfing in the morning with the boys and doing shows at night. So that was always a good lark.
Wow.
It's a full day.
I want your life.
Yeah, you're surfing with Eddie Vedder. Hopefully a board doesn't hit him in the head or, you
right.
know, he's got to perform that night.
Exactly.
What's he like?
Yeah, well,
he seems,
you know,
very personal.
They've also
got to
have... They've Sorry. Also got to have fun, you know. Again, it's that blowing off the steam thing. You've got to be able to get rid of all that energy that happens on stage, you know. It's they're very, very personable people, very, very nice, and huge supporters of females in the industry, which is something that's really dear to my heart, you know, because females in the industry is such a small percentage, you know. We don't know, like I say, everyone's freelance and, you know, there's, you know, production companies, etc., but, you know, actually touring, they we think worldwide it's probably between 10, maximum 12%, and that would include wardrobe and all sorts of things. So of the percentage of people that are females in this industry still to this day. So it's quite low, but, you know, we're working on it.
I would think that a lot of females don't want to do what you did. You were climbing light trusses when you were pregnant.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't recommend that. No.
Looking back, yeah.
All right, we're going to, Ashley's going to reach out. We got to let you go so you could do your interview. Thank you for coming on and for the great stories and for bringing bands
Absolutely.
Through. She doesn't even know if she's been in Connecticut.
Oh.
You've been in Connecticut. Well, you just don't know. It's between Boston and New York. You've been here.
If you blinked, you missed it.
I'll say Elton John. How's that? Say Elton John.
Elton John.
We'll go with it.
All right. And that's where we'll start when we have you back on. Thank you, Tana.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for having me, guys. I look forward to it.
Oh, great. Can't wait to have you back. Rock and Roll's First Female Roadie. The book, Loud, is linked up on the radio station website.